stars with awe and longing. What I've tried to do here is to ground traditional practices, particularly from the spiritual tradition I know best, Buddhism, as well as from Western psychology and, more broadly, the human potential movement, to ground these practices in the brain. In other words, what's actually happening in the brain when someone is unconditionally happy, loving, and wise? What's happening in the brain when someone is deeply absorbed in meditation, even in non-ordinary states of awareness? Or, swinging for the fences here, what could be happening in the brain of someone who's enlightened, by which I mean a brain that no longer can allow any form of greed or hatred or delusion to arise? With the recent breakthroughs in modern neuroscience, which has literally doubled its body of knowledge in about the last 20 years, we can increasingly begin to get some decent answers to these questions. Then we can engage a kind of reverse engineering. In other words, by knowing with increasing clarity and specificity something about what's going on in the brain when someone is in a positive or wholesome or even exalted state of mind, then we can use the power of the mind alone to stimulate the neural substrates underlying those wholesome states of mind and thereby strengthen them. Because, as you'll hear me talk about later, in the famous saying from the work of the Canadian psychologist Donald Hebb, neurons that fire together wire together. In short, if you stimulate positive neural substrates, you strengthen them over time. This creates a wonderfully positive cycle in which positive activities today strengthen the neural substrates of increasingly positive states of mind tomorrow, which then in turn strengthen the neural substrates of really positive states of mind the day after, leading to confidence and faith and conviction that if you keep going down the long and winding path of awakening, you will really progress in this process, perhaps, hopefully, all the way to the very end. Along that way, knowing something about your own brain can have four kinds of benefits. One, it offers an organizing framework that's a kind of big basket that can contain all the various theories in psychology or practices in psychology or all the various perspectives in the spiritual traditions or practices in the spiritual traditions that, at least in some ways, boil down to something we're actually doing in our own minds and our own brains, distinct from some transcendental X factor. Because, apart from the role, who knows, that something mysteriously divine might play, at the end of the day, whatever practices we're engaging have got to be working our own brains. So knowing something about how the brain works offers an organizing framework. Second, grounding methods for personal healing or psychological growth or spiritual practice in the brain can be very motivating. As you increasingly appreciate that what you're doing in daily life or in your therapist's office or on the meditation cushion is actually changing your brain for the better over time, that can really help you stay with the path of awakening, including through its tough patches. Third, knowing something about the brain can highlight which of the many, many methods in the large warehouse of psychological or spiritual tools are actually most useful to you. If you're a monk or nun living in the 24/7 tumbler of monastic life, grinding and polishing every day, then you can kind of afford to let the process unfold on its own. On the other hand, if you are a householder, in other words, someone living in the world, maybe raising a family, maybe paying a mortgage, going to work, paying taxes, and all the rest, someone who has limited time for psychological or spiritual practice, then it's important to find methods that